Yes, when I'm 64. Hi, everyone. This is The Age Stage, and welcome to RPPFM, wherever you are across the Mornington Peninsula, 98.7, 98.3. Great to have your company for The Age Stage. I'm Brendan Telfer, sitting in for the great man, Brodie Gouzet, who might be online listening to us at the moment, somewhere in Paris or just west of it. Vicky Barber is here, which is good news.
Hello, Brendan. How are you?
I'm very, very well and delighted to be back with you and the
it's
top team.
It's very nice to cross paths with you again.
It's super, isn't it? And let us also acknowledge our dear friends at the Village Glen Rosebud, Village Baxter, Frankston South, Freedom to Go, Carrum Downs as well. RPPFM appreciates the input and contributions of our mighty sponsors.
We definitely do, Brendan.
Brodie away, so I'm here.
He's gallivanting somewhere in France.
How lovely would that be?
Very nice. Very nice for him.
Just quickly, before I hand things over to you today, Paul Vestige is going to be talking to us about the idea of a new pension age of 70.
Yes, the age pension age now of 70.
Indeed. And so his question is, where will the new jobs come from? And Nancy Joy Gardner as well, RoadSafe Southeast, having a look at a free seniors driving expo happening in Rosebud on the 24th of this month. But we have guests. We have talent in the studio with
us. We do. We have Peter Nielsen and Tom Camp with us from our Retirement Village Alliance. So they'll be with us again today to talk about the difference between aged care and retirement village. And I think a lot of us might use those two terms interchangeably, but actually it's not. They're two very different entities, and Peter and Tom will enlighten us as to what those differences are.
Gentlemen, welcome, and thank you very much indeed for spending time with us here in the RPPFM studios. Tom, haven't seen you for a while. Peter, I did catch up with you rather recently, but Tom, welcome back.
Thanks, Brie.
What have we got?
How are you both?
Oh, I'm well, thank you. Yeah, good.
Another good week, that's good.
Yes.
No, it's been pretty cool. I was just saying, I had 5 days in the high country camping in the cold. It was fantastic. Wow. Swagging.
Oh, that's when you really feel alive, isn't it, Tom?
Well, there's no phones. How good is that? You just go to sleep by fire. It's fantastic.
Beautiful.
Now, last week we talked about fees and management fees and what needs to be paid, etc., when you're going into retirement village life. But as we just mentioned, we wanted to talk about what the difference is between aged care and retirement village, and also the steps taken into getting into either of those, the governing factors of both of those entities. Who's going to jump in first with the sort of primary difference between aged care versus retirement village?
Let me have a go.
Thanks, Peter.
The elder statesman, he's having a crack.
It is interesting because I, for many years, been doing inquiries from people, and the younger ones who come into retirement villages, I always say to them, you know, the average age of entry is about 75 into retirement village, but
right.
Clearly some of our colleagues advertise their villages from 55.
Is that something that's been around for a while? Because
it is.
You know, I near that age, I'm sort of thinking I'm not
ready.
It's a
19th century paradigm.
Yes.
So in the days
there aren't too many people I know who would move into a village environment
at the age of 55.
Particularly bearing in mind what we've just heard from Brendan about the age pension ages moving out to 70.
Yes,
so
yes.
Clearly people at 55 are still well entrenched in the workforce and probably not thinking about retirement at that stage. They might be planning with their super to be retired,
yes,
but aren't thinking about actually living the retired life. But certainly we do get from time to time people younger than 70.
Right.
And just about without exception, when I ask them who they've involved in that in the journey, like family and friends, etc., they all say, without exception, of course, our friends say, why would you be going to aged care at this age?
So they've used that term.
there's a misunderstanding in the general community about what retirement villages actually are.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said last week, really, the way to view a retirement village is just another house in another suburb with wonderful services.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and purpose-built for your age.
Purpose-built,
yes.
Yeah. And the community that surrounds you are people of a similar age with similar interests.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That's what a retirement village is. And there are some, like the Village Glen's a very large village, as is the Village Baxter.
Yes.
But typically a retirement village would be something from 120... Tom, to 150 units typically.
Yeah, right.
Typically, although they are starting to get a bit bigger now. Yeah. We're seeing some of the ones in the eastern suburbs getting up to 200, 250.
So they're like a mini suburb in their own right, really.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, so a village really is an independent living home.
So that means I can
come
press
and
a
go
button
as you
or
please. Yep.
If I need help, but I'm not actually needing nursing care, so to speak, all the time.
Yeah.
Is that the difference?
That is the difference. And as I've said on other occasions, the people who choose to move into a village at that average age of 75 or so are the people who are planning their future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're thinking and looking over the horizon of what life will be like for them in 5, 10, 15 years' time and making sure the decisions they make are the right decisions for them.
Right.
So that clearly when their health does fail, which is more into the aged care sector,
yes,
they're in a place that they're going to get support.
Right.
Mm. I'm not sure what the statistics are, Pete, but last view was just over 7% of the older population end up in some form of nursing home or aged care facility.
Mm.
Is there a difference again between nursing home versus aged care facility?
No, there's not.
Okay,
correct.
So those
nursing
terms
home,
can be
nursing
interchanged.
Nursing home is what we used to call them.
Oh, right.
There used to be in the aged care sector two cohorts. There were hostels and high care. Now, some years ago, the government combined them together and they call it ageing in place.
Yes.
And in essence, hostels have disappeared off the map. Mm-hmm. Now people move into residential aged care, which we used to call a nursing home, and then they can spend the rest of their lives there, and as their health fails,
they've got support,
more services,
right?
Yeah.
So is that more like I'm in my own room in nursing home? I've got my own room, whereas in retirement village, as you've often said, it's a whole house. I've got a couple of bedrooms, I've got a lounge room, I've got bathroom, everything separate, sort of thing.
So what used to happen in the old system with hostels and nursing homes is you got to a stage in your hostel where you needed more medical support.
Yes.
Right.
You had to move out because they didn't have it. Their bathrooms weren't designed to help assist you with showering.
Oh, right.
Couldn't get lifting machines in the bathroom for those people who weren't ambulant. So what's happened is that's all come into one, and now the new buildings are designed for what they call ageing in place. So the theory being that you can move into your room with your ensuite bathroom, and that could be you for the rest of your life if that's what you wanted.
Right.
You didn't have to move rooms or move facilities as your needs increased.
Became more prominent.
Yeah.
Okay.
And as I said, you know, if you look at the overall percentage of population that would actually need or utilise those particular services in an aged care environment, it's only, you know, around 7% of that aged population. So 93% tend to just wear out and live in their own home.
Okay.
And that's where the retirement village space comes into, because it's independent living.
Right.
It's well before you would need to move into those environments. But we're becoming increasingly, you just have to be more sensitive to the changing needs of people.
Mm-hmm.
And we find, and I don't know about you, Pete, but my older people, they just wear out. They're actually in quite good nick and they're quite good health.
I'm wearing out, Tom.
Are you wearing out? Actually, I was
like
just looking
term,
at you.
I'm wearing out.
You need another South Australian trip, I reckon.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you need to do.
Need some more red wine, I think.
But
sorry.
Great. It's a village, Glen. Great village down there. They have parties on, South Australian red wine. So I think 93% of the population still need independent living environments, but also engaging and embracing the ageing in place policy, a la by, if need be, accessing the government community care packages,
which
can be utilised in both environments.
Yes.
And from our perspective, what we're trying to do is capture people, as Pete said, in that 75 to 80 year old age group, and give them a whole of life solution.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a quality of life, taking away some of their stress, anxiety of their living environment. And hopefully they live longer and with a, you know, a sense of well-being.
And there might be that delay in them even needing that next level, which is the aged care service so to speak?
Well, that's absolutely my experience. If you look at the statistics, we only have about 2.5 to 3% of our residents actually have to go to aged care. My personal experience is they live a bit longer. We get them into their sort of early 90s. And then what happens is there's potentially an acute period where they might go to hospital, but then they just come home and it's palliative and it's all over within 3 months. Or they just die in their sleep.
Right.
That's our experience, and that's a real positive result for us because we're trying to, as I said, allow people to finish well, run their course, and in the best possible environment, and being as independent as you can, it's important. I think the other thing, Pete, that you picked up on is partly why people throw all of these living choices or options into one particular basket is there is a, it's a cultural thing that I've observed, particularly for people probably over 75, there is this concept of independence, and you've probably heard the term, they'll take me out of here in a box, you know, so they want to stay
yes,
on their quarter
term.
Acre site in their own home, regardless of the realities of health, family, and distance from what they need to do. And I think that that's beginning to change now, and I think that we're getting people coming in with a much more rounded view of worldview. So that that idea of moving into an independent living retirement village, which is just a house with a few extra services other than the house out in the suburbs, I think we're going to see that. That's going to change.
Right.
The other thing, and you've probably heard this as well, the reason we've been challenged a little bit about the costs and why the government introducing as quickly as they can these ageing in place policies is it's actually the sheer numbers that are going to come through in the next 35 years.
Yes.
We talk about this big baby boomer thing.
Yes.
I think in our environments, 5%, 6% market penetration in terms of people over the age of 75 that would live in a retirement village like what Pete and I have and Stuart. The realities are those numbers double in 15 years. So even if we only maintain 5 to 6% market penetration, it's the sheer volume and numbers, and they're the challenges for aged care, particularly with the increase of dementia and Alzheimer's and so on.
All right. We might just take a break on that, Tom. We'll take a break with our sponsors.
We will indeed. Thank you very much indeed, Vicky. You're listening to The Age Stage on RPPFM. We're with Tom Camp here from On-Call Living and also Peter Nilsson from the Village Glen down there in Rosebud. We'll take a break, and as Vicky says, we'll be right back with our guests in a wee while.
Welcome back to The Age Stage. Now, Tom and Peter, we wanted to talk, as we were, you know, mentioning before, the differences between aged care and retirement village living. And there's various legislations, government bodies, all of those sort of aspects, type of contract that defines those two particular entities. How can we sort of understand those differences and how we're governed, Peter?
Well, yes, the retirement villages in Australia are state jurisdictions, so they're all run by the local state governments, not by the federal government. And that's a very important difference between the aged care sector, which is nursing homes, as we discussed, and the independent living retirement village sector, is that in the aged care sector, it's actually legislated by the federal government and funded by the federal government.
Right.
That's a very important difference.
Right.
Is in the aged care sector, people living in their residential aged care facilities, used to be called nursing homes, are typically subsidised by the federal government. So it costs a lot of money to support people in those establishments.
Right.
And it's means tested. It's based on your income and assets. And a lot of the funds are provided by the Commonwealth government. And because it's a strange business in as much as the regulator is the funder, and he's the policeman as well. So
right, okay.
People in aged care think, like Tea Tree, we have 234 residents at Tea Tree.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think, okay, we've got 234 clients. Actually, no. We've got one client, the federal government. They make the rules. They pay us and they police us on behalf of the 234 residents. And there's all sorts of legislative programs to make sure that all the checks and balances are done so that people get well looked after. And
that
it's
you have to comply
to
with.
That we have to comply
with. In regards
with.
To
so
the government's
So that's in the federal
legislation.
Sphere, aged care. In the state sphere, the state government certainly regulate the industry.
Mm-hmm.
usually done by the local consumer affairs department within the state government.
Correct.
And and their role is to make sure that the village owners and managers are doing the right thing by their residents, but it's not funded by the state at all. So
okay.
retirement villages are independent living, self-funded residential communities.
Right.
Whereas, as I say, in the aged care, it's to a large degree funded by the federal government.
The federal
with
government.
Some co-payments depending on your income and your assets.
So there's no co-payment type thing when you're in retirement village.
No. And the good thing about a village and the great thing about home care in villages is that, in essence, people who live in retirement villages, whether they be on pensions or otherwise, are self-funded. So in the communities on the peninsula, we've got two councils down here, the Montpensier Shire Council and the City of Frankston. Both of those groups have rather large departments looking after people in their communities.
Yes.
They don't have too much to do with the people who live in their retirement villages because they are looking after themselves.
Okay.
Taking a fair bit off the expense of the council.
Correct.
Right.
Because people are now living in the village and they are looking after each other and funding it themselves.
They're private property arrangements.
Yes.
So all the services, infrastructure, roads, that's garbage collection, all those sorts of
individually
things.
Individually run, managed, et cetera.
Yes. Correct.
By the retirement village itself. So really, they're easing the pain, so to speak, for the local government sector who are providing all these additional services, et cetera.
And the good thing about home care in a village is that, as I've said before, villages are very, very good at socialising residents and providing people with opportunities to remain connected.
Yes.
Home care packages are very good at supporting people's physical needs.
Right.
So put them both together in a village environment, it's a great outcome.
Yes. But you the home still care can have the home care
in the community is fine.
Yes.
It's fine, but it does not address typically people's social needs. It only addresses their physical needs.
Right.
So there needs to be someone else involved in keeping people
connected
in their community. And particularly when people live alone, it's difficult.
And that's the responsibility we have as operators and owners of retirement villages. There's really two sectors too. There's a not-for-profit element as well. Strongly those have matured or evolved and developed out of church-based.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of them are ethnic-based, you know, nationality-based. Like you can, I think there's Croatian ones in the northern suburbs.
Dutch Care. We should change their name, but they used to be called Dutch Care.
They will be Dutch Care. Yeah. So they come out of nationalities. They come out of different Christian or other religious communities.
But they're still all governed in a similar way.
By the state legislation.
By the state legislation
as a retirement village.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a village, the definition of a village is if someone pays a refundable accommodation, Tom, help me out, I've forgotten the word.
It's called an ingoing contribution.
Thank you, Tom.
Pete Nelson, he's taught me everything I know.
So if you pay an ingoing contribution, you qualify to be a retirement village.
Right.
And there are facilities that look like retirement villages, but they are not.
And this is, we touched on this one other
land
time.
Lease.
These are the land lease.
Correct. And that's
or rental.
And when people are looking at retirement village living as opposed to a retirement village, we have what's called a third area of accommodation choices, and that's called land lease. Often referred to as manufactured home estates.
Or the old caravan park sort of an idea.
Yeah, but they're getting pretty cool now.
Oh, they're very
Let's
cool.
get real, you know. But the regulation that governs them is also state-based, but it's in Victoria, for example, it's the Residential Tenancies Act and the Removal Dwelling and Caravan.
Right, which is quite different than what?
Correct.
Your establishments
in
are governed
In simple terms,
by.
The finance arrangements are that you buy the home that you live in.
Yes.
Which is often a lot more cost efficient because if you don't have to buy the land with it, it's a lower price.
Right. So you're just renting the land, so to speak.
And then you have the home sitting on the land and you rent the land. So technically the thing can be relocated.
And the business model is built around rent assistance from the Commonwealth Government.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because the rent assistance helps you pay the weekly or the fortnightly or the monthly rental.
See, the rental assistance is getting up to just around $3,500 a year.
Right.
So
when
you're talking fees of in the order of $6,000 or $7,000 to live in an independent living retirement village, to lease the land, that can almost cut your costs in half on a weekly basis. Mm. So the affordability aspect, both at a capital outlay and both on a regular monthly basis, is actually a lot lower than even a independent living retirement village.
Right.
The only thing that I always ask my people to consider when they're looking at that, historically people, it's a younger age group that tends to move into land lease.
Yes.
They're often called lifestyle villages, or there's actually a brand called that as well, a listed company. I'm still philosophically in that straits of, is it a whole of life solution? Because
still have the services that a retirement?
They can do and feel like a retirement village.
Right.
They've got everything that a normal retirement village has. Anecdotally, though, as people are getting older, we're seeing people moving out of those. And as I said, I'm more interested in providing a whole of life solution. And I'm like you, I think, Pete, most of our stuff is slab on ground, brick veneer.
Right.
And but because of my particular arena, Encore Living, Eastwood Retirement, Mountain View at Lee and Gaffer, we're having to look at and provide rental options even with traditional real estate.
Right.
Just because of the demographic and income and capital.
Right. So instead of going in and paying this contribution at the beginning, I'm actually going in and just renting the property from you for a long-term period.
Correct.
So to speak.
And our people, if they go into those finance arrangements, can actually access the rental assistance. So we're now delivering people an option of a traditional home build in a traditional retirement village, but incorporating a rental or a leasehold option that doesn't have an ingoing contribution.
Right. Okay.
So the big thing, I suppose, out of all of this is that to understand, yes, there are choices out there that people can look at. There's living choices for everyone to consider, and there's different regulation and different law, either federal or state, that govern them, and people need to have a broad understanding of what they're looking at, what they're entering into, to make sure that they're making a good decision
for themselves. Yeah.
Guys, you mentioned the state government here, Peter. You mentioned the state government. I mean, how advanced, how proactive is the Victorian government in this discussion? Does it differ state to state?
Yes, it does. It does differ state to state.
How are we seen here in Victoria? Are we progressive?
Personally, just before you jump in, Pete, I reckon Victoria is one of the best. It's simple. It's straightforward. There's a genuine equality in looking after the resident and the owner or developer, whether it's not-for-profit or for-profit. I think consumer affairs have shown themselves to be very good in arbitrating what's going on. And we're seeing some fine-tuning and anecdotally some recommendations that are being considered. But I reckon Victoria is it's so much simpler compared with some of the other states. But passing over to you, Pete.
Well, Victoria was the first state in Australia to have a Retirement Village Act.
Okay.
Back in 1986.
Right.
And then...
So obviously saw the importance of
it. Yes, they did. And funnily enough, Chaz, the owner of the Village Glen, was on a committee that helped the government formulate the regulations.
Chaz right in the beginning.
Chaz tells a story that our planning permit became the first act. I don't know if that's right or not. But certainly a lot of the concepts in our planning permit way back in 1980 were in the first draft of the Act.
Right.
From that, clearly, other jurisdictions look at what their colleagues are doing.
Hmm.
I have a perception that they all try and outdo each other by being tougher.
Okay.
So every time one jurisdiction reviews its Act of Parliament, they introduce some new stuff and their colleagues think, oh, that's not a bad idea. We should do that too.
We should review it as
so
well.
It's a race to the bottom with tougher regulations. And sometimes that can be dangerous because, as with all things, there's unintended consequences of making laws.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And sometimes in their haste, I'm not saying they're hasty, but sometimes in haste you make laws of a particular problem and you create others that haven't been considered.
Right.
And there have been some laws that have been brought in and then taken away. Oh, hang on a minute, we've sort of overreacted there.
I think, as a younger entrant into this particular business of retirement. I think we've been very well served by some of our founding fathers, you know, Jez, yourself, Pete, Stuart, and others, the Inge Group and so on. They've done very, very well in creating what I think are the standard within the Victorian and potentially even nationally, the standard of what a retirement village is really all about. And that's reflected in our laws to date.
Well, that's good.
So I would continue to be positive that we would get excellent reviews going forward.
Well, that's great. Well, on that very positive note, Tom.
It's a very positive note, isn't it?
It's good to know that we're in a great state for retirement village and aged care as well. Thank you, Peter, for coming in today. Thank you also, Tom. It's always lovely to have you here in the studio.
It's always nice to see you too.
Appreciate all the input. Thanks.
And we're really enjoying having Brendan with us.
Actually, Brendan
well,
is
thank
hot
you very
to
much.
Nice change.
Thank you very much indeed. Tom Camp from OnCall Living, thank you very much indeed. Peter Nilsson from Village Glen Rosebud, thank you gentlemen very much indeed for your time. This is The Aged Age. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to consider some new legislation, talking about governments, the retirement age, going up to 70. But the question is, who and how are we going to work to that age? Find out after the break. Vicky Barber is here. Stage the second half of the program now, Vicky.
Yes, second half. And we've done well.
And a very important part as well, because the government is about to introduce or is considering some legislation which means that the retirement age is going out to 70.
Yes.
And the question is, where and how are we going to work? How will we keep ourselves busy until that age? Well, perhaps somebody that might be able to answer that question is Paul Vestige. He is from the CPSA, the Combined Pensioners Superannuates Association. Paul, thank you very much indeed for joining us on The Age Stage.
Yeah, good afternoon. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Vicky Barber in the studio with me. Paul?
We're good, Paul.
Hi, Vicky.
Thanks for joining us. Thank
That's
you very
right.
much.
Now, pleasure.
So the government's motive to raise the pension age to 70,
yeah.
What's the motivation behind it?
Well, it's obviously cheaper if you
yes.
keep people working longer. That's the only discernible motivation behind this proposal. Probably, you know, by the time they introduce this, there'd be a lot more people with substantial superannuation balances.
So they're looking for us to be older but also self-funded.
Yeah, so a lot of people are going to, you know, probably drop out before they're 70 out of work.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them will be forced to. And they're going to have to supplement their new start with their super.
Right. So can you explain to me exactly what New Start is? I'm a little bit unsure, and some of our listeners maybe as well.
Okay, New Start used to be known as the Dole.
Oh, okay, yes.
If you you know, if you become unemployed, mm-hmm. that is the only Social Security payment to go to.
Right.
And if you are not yet of pension age, just a few years short, that is what you will have to apply for.
Right.
And, of course, the New Start, or the Dole, is a lot less than the age pension.
Yes, I could imagine.
Which means that, you can't live on that, really. You have to supplement it with whatever else you've got, and that will be your super.
So do you think there's bigger plans for engagement of older employees, older staff, to keep them around, or, you know, has that been thought of as well? Or do we, because I've just read a line here that says anyone born in or after 1966 should be a little bit worried. Well,
yeah.
I am born after 1966, so I'm probably asking these questions on a personal level. So,
you've got an interest, yeah.
So is there a bigger picture there to encourage people to keep employees as they get older and, you know, have that experience, or, you know, can share that knowledge, etc.? I know if you're a tradesperson, it probably, you know, physically it can impede you, but there's obviously lots of other areas you can assist in. Has the government looked at that side of it as well?
The brief answer to that is no.
Okay.
But what you've got to keep, you know, on the bright side, I mean, I've been really, really pessimistic in what I've said so far, but on the bright side, the ageing of the population means that we're going to see a lot more older people around, which
right.
means that a lot of them will be, employers will not have a choice but to hire them.
Right, okay.
And that has certainly been the case in a country like the USA, for example.
Okay.
So, you know, the news is not all bad, but the policy initiatives at the moment are, you know, just one-sided, and they look at achieving a budget surplus.
Right, right.
But, Paul, is there not legislation which protects the older worker? Should the legislation not be working in our favour?
Yes. Well, there is legislation that protects older workers from discrimination on the basis of age.
Is that legislation working?
Well, I don't think it is. If you know, there's a consensus that there is a lot of age discrimination in the workplace, but there have never been any prosecutions or successful prosecutions under the discrimination legislation.
Surely then the government's going to have to firm up this legislation to give those older workers a chance and an opportunity. It's all very well redrawing the sort of the guidelines and retirement ages, but surely there has to be some inherent safeguard for these people if they're going to be working that longer.
Yeah, you would think so. But as I said, we have legislation and the rules are good, but it's very hard to prove that somebody has been you know, fired or pushed out on the basis of age, and a lot of the times, of course, people simply take the package because that is really the best thing they can do. I mean, if they go in for legislation, or sorry, for litigation, I should say, they might miss out on a package,
and that would cost them as well. So
yes, that would cost them substantially. Yeah, so that, you know, a lot of the time, where there might have been a successful prosecution, people have really opted for what was good for them, and you can't blame them.
Mm-hmm. Vicky raised the concept of the more manual worker. I mean, the tradie, the brickie, the plasterer. I mean, what happens to them at age 65? You know, they've been sort of hoisting bricks or plasterboard over their head for the last 45 years, 50 years. What happens to them as they look around for a job in their late 60s?
I'd feel very pessimistic about that. Obviously, you know, some of the trades can transfer to a desk job if that's what they want to do. But yeah, it's not easy to see how you keep bricklaying until you're 70, for example.
I'm sure some of them probably have trouble even until 65, actually. But
yeah, I know an electrician who said after when he turned 55, I can't do this anymore. Yes. I can't climb around building sites.
Well, it's a very physically demanding role.
Yes.
So if this legislation comes through, is there, like, all of a sudden, as of day dot, you know, you're about to turn 64, 65, and you think, oh, good grief, now I've got an extra 5 years. Like, is there a grace period? Is there a rollout proposed?
The usual way of introducing these things is by 6 months increments every 2 years. That's what's happening at the moment. The pension age at the moment is no longer 65. Anybody that wants to qualify for the age pension for the first time is 65 and a half now.
Right.
And that will, you know, go up by 6 months every 2 years until we reach 67. And by that time, the government will probably hope to have this new legislation in place so that we can keep increasing the pension age by 6 months until we reach 70. That's right. Probably how it's going to happen.
Right. So it's a few years that it will roll out, but we all need to be thinking of it now, I expect.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, if you are 51 or younger, then it's going to affect you.
Do we need to be having this conversation with our local member? Do we need to be getting involved in a broader state, national conversation, do you think, Paul?
Yes, I think so. You know, that's always a good thing to do, to get involved and to make known what you feel about this issue. The problem is that this sounds like an issue for older people, but it isn't. It is an issue for people who are now middle-aged and younger. Mm-hmm. They are going to be affected by this, and they are going to have to work out how they are going to get to 70 and not live in poverty.
Paul, is this bipartisan, this legislation, or is one side of politics pushing this notion of knocking the retirement age out to 70?
Well, it's not bipartisan. The opposition opposes it, as an opposition should do. But let's not forget that Labour, when it was in government, it raised the pension age to 67. So, you know, there is a consensus between those two big political blocks that substantial savings can be achieved by raising the pension age. There's no doubt about that. And if tomorrow you had a Labour government, you might find that that's, you know, that they would raise it to 70 as well. You don't know.
Is there a third political party that might be advocating on behalf of those that might be a little bit reticent about working to 70?
I'm pretty sure that you know, the Greens would genuinely oppose this. They oppose the 67 pension age. So that's pretty certain. And probably the Nick Xenophon bloc would also oppose it. Jackie Lambie has already come out and said that this is not going to happen. So we put our faith in Jackie.
Where to from here then? What is the timeline?
Well, the legislation has not been introduced yet. There is now talk that the next federal election is going to, for various reasons, is going to be not longer than a year away. So this is a perfect election issue. This is a perfect issue where people can get upset and angry about and stop it and force the current government to ditch this measure, as you know they have done with so many other quite horrific measures from the 2014 budget.
And what, as a body, will you guys be doing in this period?
Well, we will do everything we can. We'll go on media. This is what I'm doing at right now. And every opportunity we get and every opportunity we can create, we will point out that age 70 is for everyone is unfair. We will offer as an alternative that we have a floating pension age, which means that people who do physical jobs and are worn out by 55 can retire at 55, but that people like myself, who's worked in an office all his life, maybe should work to 70 and might even enjoy it. So we are not going to be all negative about the pension age going up, but to make this just a measure to save money, that is not on as far as we're concerned.
Mm-hmm. So you're advocating for more flexibility there, Paul?
Yes. France has a floating pension age. Mm-hmm. Works quite well. There's no reason why we couldn't have something like that here.
Okay. And if people want to find out a little bit more about it, or Paul, can they just contact the Combined Pensioners and Superannuants
Association?
Superannuants Association.
It's a long name, isn't it?
It is, sorry. So they can just contact you and find out any details or ask any questions?
Yeah. We are online, cpsa.org.au. They can also ring us on 1-800, and I always forget that number, 1-800-451-488. And I really encourage people to go to our website. We have loads of very interesting information there, not just on the pension, but also aged care, health, transport, you name it.
Fantastic, Paul. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Paul, thank you very much for your time. RPPFM across the Mornington Peninsula. This is the Age Stage, and Paul Vestige there from the Combined Pensioners and Superannuants Association. Do get in touch with him. Do go to the website. Vicky Barber will be back on the other side of this break, as will I. This is the Age Stage from an idea proposed by the Village Glen in Rosebud, the Village Baxter in Frankston South, and Encore Living in Carrum Downs. We'll be back in just a moment with a Big Drivers Expo. Yes, this is the Age Stage on RPPFM. There's just a little bit of one of my favourite guys at the moment. He's almost 80 years of age. Can you believe it?
That is Taj
Mahal. This is the Age Stage. Vicky Barber is your host. On the line, Vicky, our next guest
is Nancy Joy Gardner. Thank you for joining us, Nancy.
Hello, Vicky. It's my pleasure.
How are you today?
Fighting fit and raring to go.
Oh, well, that's what we like to hear. That's great. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Now, you're helping to run and organise a free seniors drivers expo, which is Saturday week on the 24th of June. Can you tell me a little bit about the expo?
Right. Well, I first came across it 8 months ago, and I was so impressed with it, what it does for seniors.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hands-on seminar, and it was so exciting. It took me 8 months to get permission and get the property rights to run it on the peninsula.
Oh, so you saw it elsewhere and you're bringing it...
I saw it in Altona.
Mm. Right, and you're bringing it to the peninsula. So when you say hands-on, in what way is it hands-on? Does everyone get behind the wheel of a car?
No, yes they do, in their own car.
Oh.
And they'll get a free assessment in their own car.
Right.
They'll get a free car assessment from Vic Roads.
Right.
We have three Vic Roads men attending from the vehicle inspection group. And we have three driving schools attend where the instructors will hop in their car so they feel comfortable. Now, all this is confidential. If there's something wrong with their car, they're not going to be shoved off the road and all that nonsense seniors seem to panic about, and I'm a senior. It's just a friendly, up-to-date, how's your car going? This is what we've found today, or your car's going great. Or it might be in the instruction side of it where one of the driving instructors might say, oh, look, you didn't look over your shoulder then. It is necessary before you turn left if there's a bike lane that you do check.
Right.
So it's just all free.
Right.
They also have a video and a Vic Roads presentation on tyres and what to look for in a tyre when it's time to change and what to look for. It's just the most interesting hands-on for seniors where it's all free. The local council will be providing Road Safe Southeast, of which I'm a volunteer member,
yes,
provides all the food, etc.
Oh, how lovely. Now,
yes,
it's a 9:45 a.m. start. It's at Rosebud Memorial Hall, or the Bingo Hall there,
yes,
at 994 Point Nepean Road in Rosebud. Now, do people have to book to be a part of this expo, Nancy?
It is important that they do book because we're having it catered for.
Wonderful.
And unfortunately, I eat more than I should. I eat enough for 2 years. But look, it's a great program. I can't support it and volunteer about it more than I am, because it's just such a great program and it's free.
That's great. And so do they go through, I'm sure, you know, there's changes in road laws, you know, that can be quite regular or constant. So do they go through an update of any changes? Do they talk about, as you age, your health and driving, all of those sort of aspects?
Yes, they do all medicines, health and driving, eyesight. They do everything like that. And they also receive in their show bag a free up-to-date road rule book.
Oh, fantastic.
Which roads that my Road Safe group provides.
Yes.
Which costs $17 and they'll get it free.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And my mantra is, seniors will buy a bottle of plonk and a packet of fags, but they won't buy a road rule book. So we're going to give them one. But if you say to them, oh, there's new road rules, why wasn't I told? Well, why didn't they buy an up-to-date road rule book?
Yes. I like your thinking, Nancy.
We've got to be a little bit responsible for ourselves.
Yes, yes.
You know, we've got to really get up to scratch with the road rules, because when we went for our licence a few years ago, we went with the police, and if we didn't pass the road rules, we didn't get on the road. We were cancelled. We couldn't go for our finish our test.
Yes, yes.
So if they don't know the road rules now, should they be on the road?
Well, that is a question.
No.
That's a very good question. And when we talk about health and driving and seniors, you said that there's an eye test that they
do. No. We just tell them about what is required.
Oh, what's required? Sorry.
Prescription glasses and. And there's a lot of different medical conditions that are long-term that must be reported to Vic Roads.
Oh, right.
And I can hear people going, oh, I'm not going, I'm not losing my licence. You don't lose your licence, listeners. It's just to support you.
And it's just to say that you may have this particular ailment or issue and let them know.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Vic Roads needs to know it, and you know, because it may have an impact on your insurance. And then if the insurance want a written report, if you ever have an accident, we are covered.
Oh, okay.
You were wearing glasses, you have got this S for spectacles on your licence under conditions.
Right.
And when you turn that licence over and you've got a conditional licence, it'll say spectacles must be worn at all times whilst driving.
Right, right.
And that protects you.
Okay.
Because Vic Roads knew about it. But that's only one of many conditional licences. Vicky, there's some that you cannot drive in the dark, or you can only drive within 15 k's of your own area, because they want to keep them in the car.
Yes, they want to keep you mobile.
They want to keep you in the car because they haven't got enough buses and trains and trams and everything. If everyone had to get out of their car, it would be horrific. But Vic Roads try to keep you in the car, providing it's safe to do so.
Mm-hmm. And the people, the guys from Vic Roads are also assessing your vehicle just to, again, nothing to be afraid of. It's more just to let you know that... yes, everything's great, or if there is a minor issue, that then you can address it before it becomes anything worse.
We have an evaluation after it, and, you know, I've only presented four of these programs since I first came across it and got permission to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone that's been, 99% have said what a great program. They've loved it.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we hope you get a great turnout there, Nancy. I'm sure you will.
Well, the last one we run there, we did get a good turnout. But all I ask is people to ring up.
Now, is there a number then, Nancy, for them to call to book?
Yes, I'll give you both my numbers. I'll give my mobile, which is 0419 398695. And I'll give you my after-hours home number, 59864621. And if you could just keep announcing those phone numbers till the people have written them down. And if their preference is to ring me of a night, it's best after 6 or 7 o'clock, and I can chat more to them about it and what benefits they'll get out of it. It's a fabulous program. And the best part about it, it's all free, FRWE.
We like that, Nancy. We definitely do.
And there's plenty of food. They can eat till the cows come home.
Okay. Well, I'll get Brendan to repeat those numbers, but I'll just give the dates and the details again. It's Saturday, the 24th of June from 9:45 a.m. It's the Senior Drivers Expo, and it's being held at Rosebud Memorial Hall, or the Bingo Hall, at 994 Point Nepean Road in Rosebud.
So yes, and Vicky, the guys will say, oh, we don't need to go. Yes, you do, guys, because when I ask you, can you park opposite double lines, you all say yes. That's the wrong rule now. That's the wrong answer. So come along and get the free road.
Well, I think I need to come then, Nancy.
Yes. It's all changed, and there's about 10 new road laws since 2009.
Okay.
So we really need the guys to come as well that say that they don't need it. They do. They need Auntie Nan.
We all need Auntie Nan. Nan, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great. All the best to you and congratulations. Hope the Free Seniors Driving Expo goes well on the 24th of June. Thank you very much indeed for joining
us. Thanks, Brendan. Thanks, Vicky. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
And drive up here sometime and drop in and have a couple with us, eh?
Love to.
Come and kick a couple of tyres out in the car park.
Okay, thank you.
See you, Nan. Thank you very much indeed. Vicky, that's Nan, and of course...
What a wonderful woman.
Indeed, she's a great talent. I thought you'd love her. 0419 398 695 or 5986 4621 if you want to speak to Nan and find out more about the Free Seniors Drivers Expo happening on Saturday, the 24th of June at the Rosebud Memorial Hall, as Vicky said, Bingo Hall, that is 994 Point Nepean Road from 9:45 a.m.
Yes.
That's us for
the
week.
That's another week done.
How's that? In the can.
In the can.
Brody,
well done.
Eat your heart out.
I hope he is listening in.
Time for us to go. Tom Camp from OnCoal Living, thank you very much indeed. Peter Nielsen dropped by, of course, from the Village Glen in Rosebud. Thank you very much indeed, Peter. And also, of course, we heard from Paul Vestige from the Combined Pensioners Superannuates Association. That legislation, keeping a bit of an eye on that. Vicky, you will be back at the same time next week.
I will be, and so will you, no doubt.
I will be back looking after things as well, if you'll put up with me.
Okay.
We're going to leave you with another, the 80-year-old Taj Mahal playing us out today.
Fantastic.
Don't Leave Me is the name of his latest track. I think he does it pretty well for 80, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
See you next time, everyone.